My name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
To you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys. Got a light? It's time for smokes.
Hey, welcome to this interesting online edition of Sip Suds and Smokes. This is our state of smokes.
The state of smokes.
So I just thought, you know, we always have a lot of interesting conversation about kind of the state of some of the industries, you know, that we actually cover here on Sip Suds and Smokes. And, you know, the cigar area has been a very lively, you know, industry, you know, for something that's been fairly steady for a long period of time. There's still an awful lot that's going on. And so I thought I'd actually lead off our discussion here with this bellwether agreement that the PCA has struck with the FDA this year. So this is an ongoing measure of, I don't even think it was litigation. I think it was just a matter of legislative, regulatory, you know, language just kind of was moving in from the FDA.
Some big words.
And part of what was happening is that they were just lumping in everything into one giant category of flavored tobacco. And this was directly, you know, an offset of a lot of vape pens. I'm not going to mention any particular brands because I don't want to get sued by them. But they rhyme with mool. and so part of, you know, they were really getting a lot of pressure, as they should, with, you know, abuse by minors with a lot of these products that were being, you know, introduced into a lot of these products. And so the way they just attacked it is said, ban all flavors, including premium cigars. In fact, you know, everybody's going to have to pay a huge tax, you know, on all of this, you know, on top of whatever you're paying now. So we were, you know, so premium cigar, you know, smokers were actually going to pay for the sins of something that they weren't even consuming at all.
Yeah, you know? I mean, so, well, and even when, so 2016 is when it first got introduced. Yeah. And the first original document I know was like 400 pages. And the big thing was the fact that, yes, the vape stuff, and they had never really gone after that type of tobacco as far as regulations. Now, as we know, like we talk about on this show, premium cigars have so much more to do with heritage and flavor and complexity, and it's not this fix. Or
premium cigars were here for 70 years before the vape pen was even invented.
Oh, yeah, no, for sure.
Right. It's like, but it's like, you know, I think we had a problem with what you've been doing for the last 70 years. I'm like, really?
Right. Okay. Yeah. Well, and it's like there's the conversation of, well, what's in it? Well, it's tobacco. It is literally tobacco. Some of it's aged and fermented longer. Some's not. But something I find very interesting, I actually had this conversation once with a guy who turned out to be an attorney in D.C. He sues big cigarette companies, and he's like a lobbyist and all that stuff. And we were talking about it, which it's cool because I was able to have a conversation with him about cigars and open his perspective up. But we were talking and he was like, yeah, I know for a fact all the FDA people that they brought in to handle that originally were all the people who handled big pharma. So it's like, of course you have these people who are used to regulating this drug and this thing and this pill and all that, who are like, well, what is this and what's in it? And it's just great that over time we've been able to come to the resolution with them of like, a premium cigar is qualified as this. It is hand rolled. It is purely tobacco. It is these things. Now, I will say we still have dangers with flavored tobacco, and that can affect our industry just as much. And I still think there's an importance in differentiating between machine-made flavors and then regular flavored cigars, because still regular flavored infused cigars, the processes are still done in such a natural way.
Yeah.
And they're also, they're still supported by so many of the other brands that help hold up this industry,
yeah,
and help support this industry. And so it's like
Drew Estates, they're, yeah, one of the big,
I mean Acid Cuba, yeah, Cuba was number four sold cigar in a row in America for like 5 years.
It's a shame.
I know, but it's I like to tell people it's like Starbucks coffee. You have cream and coffee and sugar, and there's lines out the, yeah, door. But
the taste is subjective in the end,
is,
of the day,
you know.
Like I just have to grit my teeth when I'm at a shop and I'm watching these people buy handfuls of these flavored cigars, and I'm just like, man, I really hope one day that you get your training wheels off.
Yeah, but I mean, I would much rather somebody come into an actual tobacco retailer.
Oh, sure.
Right, a premium cigar shop, walk around, interact with the person that's hanging out there that day, right, and running the shop, and ask those questions, you know, because, you know, I would much rather see somebody grab a handful of Fat Bottom Bettys or grab a handful of Javas or Acids,
yeah, than or Sweet Mary Jane,
then stop by their, you know, local gas station, pick up, you know, 99-cent White Owls,
yeah,
right? Because, you know, I think that as far as this conversation goes, like, those are the things that you're really looking to regulate, right?
Right.
Things that
the
have been processed in... overly processed, if you will, right? I think there's still a level of, you know, complexity and a level of care that goes into making some of these flavored cigars, right? And as the industry and the world turns, right, we want to be approachable to the people that are new to the cigar industry, right, and wanting to get new into the cigar world. And you know, it's not all the time that, like, something that I think is going to be smooth and easy and approachable is going to be something that is palatable to someone that wants to kind of see what that's about, right? So, like, it's the same way I draw the lines to, like, the whiskey or the beverage industry, right? We've all had that instance where we're drinking some type of flavored whiskey, flavored vodka, right? Like, Mike's got a preference here as far as the vodka
loves
goes,
the screwballs.
For sure.
Well, I think that is my observation about what's going on, is that the slippery slope that this is introducing within the regulatory community, because if you really start thinking about other things that could be on this slope, would be going after the
spirits,
same target audience. So, you
coffee.
Know, they, hey,
yeah.
You know, they start with, and you have to look at the pattern that's, they're going after things that actually end up being targeted, marketed to minors in the U.S. And so when you look at other things that fall in that category, why are they not going after flavored, you know, hard seltzers? Why are they not going after, you know, flavored whiskey? Why are they not going after, you know,
I'm sure just give it time.
Other flavored products that are going, you know, targeted after that same, you know,
younger
demographic
crowd.
Yeah, so
I mean, that's in the 90s. That's why they got rid of, like, Smoking Joe Camel.
Well, I think the other thing is too, is especially in the spirit industry, a lot of those marketing companies have some pretty firm lines about what they're able to do from a marketing perspective to promote the product, where I don't see the same kind of guidelines in the cigar world, right? It's still kind of the Wild West is from a marketing perspective, especially with a lot of the smaller companies and kind of how they brand it. Like, there's some brands that are out there, and I guess they're technically retailers that have some, like, white label products made, but, like, very much so tiptoe on the lines of the things that they like and identify with, whether it be, you know, cartoons, comic books, right?
Yeah.
These kind of more playful, kind of juvenile ideas, you know, that they're kind of tossing out there wholeheartedly is, like, their brand. You know, now the product may not be something that's approachable to somebody that's, you know, not of age. But at the same time, right? Like, and I think you brought it up about the Havana cigars in a separate conversation. But like, even in Canada, there's that like static brown wrapper that goes over the actual cigar band.
Yeah, so that's,
so that it's not appeasing to that, anyone.
It was so strange for me to walk into a humidor in Canada and see the boxes. I knew the boxes. I knew what they were. But every cigar in every box, no matter the manufacturer, has a brown band with white letters over it that says what the cigar is, and it's over top of the colored, nice, decadent bands on them.
Interesting.
And every cigar, it's like walking into the doctor's office of cigars. Like,
it's the most Canadian thing ever. It's like, I'm sorry that this is attractive.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so weird. One of the things that this brings to my mind in this conversation is the factories. So not only if the regulations become harder on the flavored cigars and try to push them out of the game, you got to think about the factories that affects, the communities that build and manufacture these cigars that affects. So now we're not only dealing with a smoking demographic, you're now dealing with livelihood of families and people and entire towns.
One other observation I have about this, and it's a well-established pattern from regulators, that if you can define it and you can stick a label on it, you can tax it. And how many things have we seen, you know, where that happens, you know, time and time again, where they go through a pattern of it's in a very broad category and then move to the point of describing it in a distinctive way. And that leads to somebody walking up going, I know who you are. I know what that is. And I can draw that up in a piece of legislation of saying, you're going to pay more money for that now.
Right.
Because they have a way of, you know, distinctly identifying it. And so I think that is that's the flip side of what the PCA has done here. I think that it's serving their need right now to exclude themselves out of the proposed regulatory language. But the flip side of the equation is that the folks at the TTB are licking their lips going, oh, so we can tax premium cigars different than the way we do other cigars because it has now been defined. That's the flip side.
Yeah. What the guys at PCA are doing, Todd and them, are really stepping out and really just headstrong forefronting this legislation. And I think it's really great what they're doing with the PCA and the CRA. And man, hats off to you guys for all the hard work you guys put into that.
Yeah,
that is bravo. And when we're in your corner, buddies, then we got you.
Well, let's move on.
I wish to register a complaint.
I do, yes. So the topic I wanted to talk about was, you know, the availability of Cuban cigars on a global basis. So I did a lot of international travel.
Real ones
travel.
Or fake ones?
Well, you know, do you really know the difference? You know, I would say at this point.
That's another episode coming.
Yeah, always. And a very, you know, very hot topic always. You know, when somebody asks us, what do you think of this Cuban? I think it's fake. Really? Dude, I paid, you know, an ungodly amount of money for this. It's supposed to be real. So I guess the thing that I really observed as I was traveling all through Europe, you know, for a few months, is the net effect that it's having on Cuban cigar distribution. So I actually went to Spain very much with the mindset of I knew that was ground zero to be able to pick up really great Cuban cigars.
Yeah.
I mean, that is traditionally the number one distribution country, you know, for Cuba. And yet the amount of Cuban cigars that were available there was just a paltry, you know, amount of things that were available. And even with that, the retail prices were almost three times, you know, what they were on average.
That's how they were in Canada.
I could not believe, you know, that, you know, some sticks that I had smoked, you know, just even 10 years ago were three times the price. It was just unbelievable. But, you know, speaking of fakes, the Cohibas were everywhere.
Yeah.
And even as I traveled to other countries, I noticed how often I would pick one up and say, wow, that is not real.
Right.
And it's, you know, as much as they have worked hard to try and thwart, you know, counterfeiting elements, you know, with the with, you know, putting holograms on the boxes, you know, of yeah. putting, you know, black light ink, you know, all over the boxes, over the wrapper, even on sometimes on the cigars themselves, yeah. you know, just how, you know, pervasive it is. So the one thing that I learned out of all, you know, was like, okay, so if the Cubans are not here, where did they go? And surprise, surprise, China.
Right.
Is the market number that one market. Is the number one market for Cuban sticks.
So we met a couple of guys at PCA, oddly enough, that manufacture high-end humidors.
Ike and...
Henry.
Henry.
And they were absolutely talking about this, how they China only buys local tobacco, right? So local Chinese blended cigars, and then Cubans. It's literally like the only two types of premium cigar that you can purchase in China.
What was funny for me is that being the case, they were only smoking Davidoffs.
Well, and I think I may have misspoke, but I think Davidoff is one of the ones that they'll let pass into, you know, the Chinese public, right? Obviously, that's heavily regulated by the government there on what they're allowed to import from that perspective. But the other part of that is, too, is like the agricultural standpoint for Cuban-produced tobacco has also taken a big hit, specifically in the last year, you know, because hurricanes. Right. And so they're trying to rebuild a lot of these places. And who knows how much tobacco was lost there also.
It's not a lot of state money to go back and reinvest in, you know, a lot of those markets that, you know, they lost their number one customers when a lot of those farms were created. So, you know, I've got to believe that at the end of the day, China has not only displaced what they've lost to the USA, but they've probably tripled or quadrupled the amount of demand, you know, in the Chinese market, would be my guess. I don't really know the exact numbers, but that would probably be, you know, how I think it went.
Right.
So I am nowhere near a Cuban expert at all, but I do remember reading some article this year about there was something that was done too, where they talking about the pricing, and I know that they had some way that they changed their pricing structure to where it is now supposed, and I don't know with taxing of different countries, but they're supposed to be like same MSRP no matter the country. If you're in Spain or you're in Canada or you're in Singapore, like you're supposed to be, from my understanding, the way that they were creating it is they wanted everything to be the same cost. So obviously that's going to go to the higher end of where a country would carry it. And so, yeah, I mean, everywhere I've been hearing about these influx of prices and these influx of things. And it's crazy because years ago I went to Cuba, and it's also bizarre because are there any Cuban cigars in Cuba? Not really. There's not many there to buy. There's not, I mean, most of the stuff you're looking for and want, yeah, it gets shipped out. There's no point in keeping it in that country because nobody can afford it. So,
right. Well, the other observation I had on that walkabout was the interesting displacement that vape is having against several different categories, both cigarettes as well as premium cigars. And so you would walk into, you know, these cigar shops, and not only do they now have the Cubans, but in general, they would not even have like hardly any cigars. I mean, there were several shops that I walked into. It was like they had five token boxes, you know, of cigars, and the rest of their inventory were all vape pens or they were, you know, loose cigarettes.
Yeah.
So that's a good transition point. And my resident expert sitting beside me here, how is TCH going to displace all of this?
I have no idea.
Because I see it really coming hard and fast because you have tremendous investment in the cannabis industry, both in the U.S. and Canada alone. The amount of money that is flowing, you know, in legalized operations for cannabis-based products is huge. Yeah. And the thing is is that going to displace people that would normally have consumed, you know, premium cigars as well?
I don't think it will displace anything.
It's a very different demographic.
I think there are a lot of cigar smokers that also smoke cannabis. And, I mean, there's a good... Think about Thor with Cigar Press Magazine. Like, he also is a cannabis enthusiast. So he was working on a cannabis magazine as well. And it's crazy. He's like, it's just how they juxtapose together. Because a lot of people in the industry also partake in cannabis. And I haven't found anyone that goes one way or the other. They usually go both, you know.
Well, I think you're going to produce the first self-help video on how to smoke dab. So
yeah, that will be a sip, suds, and smoke.
Well, and yeah, and honestly, exclusive. That conversation is really similar to like, oh, we've got this incredible new whiskey or this thing, or, you know, as far as alcohol goes, will that take precedent over cigar? And it's like, well, why? A lot of people, I think, are finding the marriage of the two, or, you know, it's not necessarily a thing that would overtake it, because it still doesn't require the time and enjoyment that people would get out of an actual cigar.
Well, hopefully you're enjoying our discussion we're having about the state of smoke so far. Listen, we're going to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. We have some other topics for us to chat about. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Rolling clouds and crashing surf. Iridescent dunes reflecting by the light of a rising, glowing moon. Seashore mesmerizing, night breeze hypnotizing. We've come across these back roads none too soon. Look to the left, to the right. Keep your eyes on the road, my darling, wondering if we're only passing through. Open roads and open windows, my hand is yours forever, sweet love.
Hey, welcome back to Sip, Suds, and Smokes. On this online edition of Sip, Suds, and Smokes, we're talking about the state of smokes, and going to cover some things that, you know, some topics that were boiling around during season 11. So, you know, we're all smoking something interesting tonight. I thought it'd, you know, take the time for us to just talk about the sticks that are in our hand. Benjamin, what are you smoking tonight?
Yeah, so I'm actually smoking one of my top three. This is going to be the Cavalier Inner Circle.
It's the first edition.
Yeah, first edition.
That's my favorite.
You know, I think you can still get them, right? Like, they're still on your local tobacconist.
Regular production.
Yeah. This thing is great, man. So I was thinking and putting my thoughts together about what I was going to bring and smoke here this evening. And I brought a couple of options, but this is definitely one of those. I wanted something. This is oddly enough for me today. This is my first smoke of the day. So I wanted something that was a little bit more mild and meek, and I think that this one does it beautifully, right? Like that full flavor profile is there, but it's not super strength heavy, right? It's probably like medium strength, and this thing is on the edge of spicy, right? Like maybe some more subtle baking spice as opposed to like pepper or any of those kind of abrasive spices.
Yeah.
It's got some nice kind of cool woody kind of hickory notes to it. And just for me is, you know, just a smooth draw. It's comes in a bellicosa size. So you get to kind of play a little bit there, with how the draw works, but the draw is actually a little bit tighter on this one. But the smoke production's incredible. And these things burn beautifully. I do not recall a time currently where I've had any like burn issues. I don't recall a time where I've had to like touch up a Cavalier.
Yeah. I've smoked a bunch of them and I have not had a bad one.
Mike kind of talked about this earlier, on another episode, but that, you get down to the nub and you go,
oh man,
crap, this is, yeah, I can't believe it. There's got to be one more, you know, burning your lips on this thing.
Should have picked the Churchill.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. Grab the roach clip.
Yeah. What's your rating on that stick?
This is a 3 for me.
Oh, wow, cool.
I'll second that 3.
Yeah. Barger, what are you smoking tonight and why'd you bring it?
Well, I'm smoking a Foundation Metepe. Metepa?
Metapa.
Metapa. See, languages is hard for me. And I think it's the Churchill size I'm smoking. 7, the double Corona, yeah. It's decent. I mean, it's I just picked it up today, and I had a little bit of construction issue with it. Probably within my first 2/3 of it, it kind of got to where it wouldn't draw, so I had to keep working at it. But that could have been humidification. I don't think it was quality, because I really haven't had a bad quality from Foundation.
Are you saying there's part of your truck ain't humidified?
Yeah, just the dashboard, you know. It's getting chilly out there. But yeah, you know, the Foundation's making some really quality products right now, and I'm stoked to see what's coming out from them. And they just released a couple of really, really good cigars, which I haven't got to try yet.
We want to really cover, I think it's the Aristocrat series.
Yeah. The really expensive series that I can't quite afford yet. So if y'all want to send me some, go ahead and send them on, and we'll get them on the show.
Yeah, we'd like to not talk about it hypothetically.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, as far as this goes, I was in the humidor before I came here, actually, and I picked up 3 or 4 cigars, and that was, I kind of had a crap day at work today, and just in my head all day, and I was like, you know what, I need a cigar that I can smoke a long time on, and I don't have to think about. And so I saw this, the banding was great, the construction looks great, overall, it's a very appealing cigar, so I splurged and got it, and I'll give it a 3, you know.
Cool. So the stick that I brought tonight was from Nova. This was a PCA release.
That's
this
the female.
Is the Trappist 1G is the stick that I decided to enjoy tonight. This was a, I will, you know, this is an interesting brand. It's a female, a CEO. If I mispronounce her name, I'm sorry. It's Lenore Obzoradel.
She was very sweet at the PCA.
She was. I enjoyed the conversation. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. But, you know, this is part of the Trappist-1 system itself, and there are several different ones. There's another one that is like the 5 Burrows that they had, another interesting stick, very different than this one. The makeup of this cigar is, I'm looking it up here, I knew I would get it wrong, it's from Terra Nova Cigar Factory in Santiago, Dominican Republic. So this is a DR stick. And I'm getting to the filler binder at one point in time. So I know that the wrapper is a beautiful Habano 2000 Oscura wrapper. You know, kind of interesting. I think I was expecting something a bit more abrasive from just what I had read about this previously, and it wasn't. It was really quite well balanced. I had, you know, some interesting, you know, construction issues. The ash on this was just like flaking all over the place, and you know, I've been smoking it very consistently. I'm not a huffer and puffer to, you know, overstoke the tobacco itself, but that was the only thing that I noticed from a construction perspective. I really like this wrapper a lot. I'm probably, this would be a one and done for me. I probably would not go back to this stick, but I'm glad I enjoyed it tonight. I think from our 1 to 5 scale, this is a solid 3 for me as well. Nate, what'd you bring tonight and why?
So I happen to bring the same thing that Barger's smoking.
Ah.
But a different size. The Metapa from Foundation, it's their newest line, regular production. It's a Sumatra wrapper with a Connecticut broadleaf binder and then Nicaraguan fillers. This cigar also comes in Claro or Maduro. I think you're smoking the Maduro too, Mike, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm smoking the Maduro, and I've had a couple of these, and I've really come to love this cigar. It's got a lot of rich characteristic to it, and I just get a lot of flavor that I don't get from a lot of other things. off this cigar. So I've come to really like them so far, and it's up there for me in my upcoming favorites. It's still a little too new to know, but I've really enjoyed this one.
Hmm. What's your rating on that stick?
We're going out of five, right?
Uh-huh.
I'd put it at a four right now, out of five.
All right.
Yeah!
I don't know if we're going to stick with that with our ongoing sound clip for four, but
hey, we're up in the ratings to five, so I'm happy.
Yeah, so I did manage to find the wrapper and filler for my stick from Nova. Again, this was the Trappist 1G. Just to remind you, it's Ecuadorian Habano.